We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to the Cash Considerations Podcast, a Chicago Bulls podcast. Well, we're celebrating another Bulls win. Jason, I'm with Jason Pat. What's going on?
It's going well. Yeah, that's 4 out of 5 wins for the Bulls all of a sudden. I guess if you want, they're ruining their tank dreams if you want to think of it that way. But we're not, because we're going to be positive. These Bulls are actually playing some pretty damn good basketball. They beat the Grizzlies tonight 109 to 107. Not the prettiest of games, but they played pretty well in the second half. Zach LaVine had another really nice game after kind of a downer game in the loss to the Bucks. He bounced back with 30 points on 12 of 19 shooting, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. Lowry didn't make any threes, but he got another double-double. He's been racking up double-doubles like crazy. 22 points and 10 rebounds. Otto Porter came back after a leg injury, 20 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. I think that makes the Bulls, what, 5-2 now with Otto Porter Jr. in the lineup? Do I have that right, Ricky?
Yeah, 5-2 with Otto Porter Jr. One of the games they lost since they acquired him was against Milwaukee when he didn't play. But Jason, before we get too much further in this podcast, we should introduce our special guest.
We do have a special guest. That is Mark. Honestly, I don't even know how to. Is it Karen Sulis? Right? I should know how to say your last name. At MK Hoops, Mark Karen Sulis, and also Bulls HQ podcaster. We got a little of a little cross podcast going here. Mark, welcome.
Thanks, fellas, mate. You nailed that last name pronunciation.
So I am a Greek, so that is a Greek last name, right?
Yeah, it is. So, okay, yeah, you did well. But I'm pumped. I'm pretty sure I'm the first international guest ever on Cash Consideration. So for this pod, at least, I'm going to consider myself Lowry Markkanen. I'll let you decide as to which one of you is Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn. But I'm definitely going with Lowry.
Well, thank you for joining us. Like I said, you could find Mark, great Bulls fan out in Australia. He does another really good Bulls podcast called Bulls HQ. I've been on there a few times. Always fun to talk basketball with him. Mark, the Bulls have been really good lately. And what has been, I guess, the biggest development that you've seen in these this month? The Bulls just wrapped up February where they had, if I haven't checked the updated since, they've had, I believe, one of the best offenses in the league. What have you really liked that you've seen over this last month of basketball after a season that was pretty much fucking terrible leading up to it?
Yeah, I'm still getting my head around it. Obviously, we're pretty much finished February now, so it's taken me still the whole month to realize what the hell's happening. Obviously, Zach LaVine and Lowry Markkanen have been absolutely insanely good this month, but I don't know why it's sort of just randomly come out of nowhere. Obviously, the Bulls have changed the way they've played on offense. They've opened things up. And maybe the trade, obviously, of Otto Porter has definitely helped that. But even before Porter, I think we started to see LaVine and Markkanen sort of, I guess, take that next step. And that's what I really want to see in March and April, to see if this is just a one-month sample where these two guys have really come on and sort of played out of their skin, or if this is the sign of things to come. So that's what I'm really looking forward to for the rest of the season. But the offense has been opened up. The team is playing a lot smaller. They're playing a lot faster. They're shooting a lot more threes. They're getting into transition a lot more. So basically, they're doing all the things that they were meant to do under Fred Hoiberg at the start of the season and even last season. But I don't know why we had to go through that two-month period with Jim Boylan where we had to really slow things down and grind it out and just make the team play some terrible basketball. I'm sure some people argue that had to happen to get to this position, but I would definitely argue against that logic. So I don't know. They're playing exactly how I would like to see them play. And I think we're reaping the benefits of that right now.
Yeah, so you mentioned the just playing faster. Like tonight, it wasn't the fastest pace game, but just in general, pushing the ball in transition. The Bulls had 30 fast break points tonight. They're forcing a bunch of turnovers and just pushing pace like that. I mean, who knew that pushing pace would get you easy opportunities in transition? We've seen Lauri Markkanen play point guard. Like just the stuff that we've seen from Lauri lately, especially, it's just been absolutely incredible. What is some of the stuff that you've seen just from Lauri specifically that has just opened up his game and taken him to the next level? Because now he, after this game, finishing up February with averages around like 25, 26 points a game, just his offensive game, just kind of, you mentioned, just kind of coming out of nowhere, blowing up. What have you seen specifically that you've liked the most that has led him to this, taking this big jump?
I think just generally speaking, his mindset. I don't know if it's to do with the trade and the fact that Bobby Portis and Jabari Parker are no longer here, but clearly for whatever reason, he's just been super aggressive in February. And I mean, his shot attempts are up per month. Maybe that's got to do with Portis and Parker no longer being around. He doesn't necessarily have that competition behind him at power forward. So maybe the fact that those guys have been removed from the rotation has not only just balanced everything up for the whole team, but it's made marketing. I guess he's sort of been in the past, he's been a little bit prone to defer, but now he's got real no choice but to be aggressive. So he and Levine, I think they've consistently gone out there and they've been really sharing that usage pretty well. So I think more than anything, obviously we've seen certain skill sets of him improve over the last month, but I think none of that really happens if his mindset doesn't change. But he's just been really aggressive, actually wants the ball, he's commanding the ball now. Off rebounds, he's bringing the ball up the floor and he's really initiating the offense. So I don't know if that's something that Jim Boylan has sort of brought out of Lauri, or Lauri himself has taken on board himself to really be that more aggressive style of an offensive player. But that's been the biggest improvement, or the biggest thing I've noticed with Lauri over the last, let's just call it, 4 weeks or so.
And it's not a coincidence that I feel like these things have coincided with getting Otto Porter. Now, everyone thinks that the three of us are always overwhelmingly negative about everything the Bulls do, but I feel like we all credited them for this move. Jason and yeah. I immediately applauded it on our podcast. I did on Twitter as well. I just feel like this trade helped the team so much for a variety of reasons. You just look at getting Porter and Parker to shoot first, no defense, no playmaking ability, power forwards. Getting those two guys out of the lineup, getting a legitimate small forward in there clearly helped. And just to address the elephant in the room really, really quick, because I'm looking at the conversation going on after this Bulls win against the Grizzlies, the general chorus from people seems to be, oh, great, the Bulls are ruining their chances in the tank once again. I mean, it did sort of happen last year once they got Nikola Mirotic healthy. They rolled off 7 straight wins for a stretch there. And that legitimately did cost them, you know, a better spot in the draft. I still think they ended up with a pretty good player in Wendell Carter. Well, are the Bulls doing it again? I don't really think you can say that, because the Bulls now they're in fourth. It's 17-45 after the win against the Grizzlies. The Hawks also won tonight. So the Bulls, by winning this game, didn't lose any ground. The Hawks are on a tear lately. They're playing even better than the Bulls. They're 21-41. So there's a 4-game cushion there. There's 21 games left. Now, it's true that the top three all get a 14% chance at the number one pick. Well, the Bulls, if they come in fourth, they only lose 1.5%. So they'll be at 12.5. I feel like my general takeaway from this is that, first of all, the tanking rules actually accomplished their intent, which was so that people could like develop their guys instead of coming up with garbage injuries and just resting, you know, mostly healthy players, so the math would be more in their favor in the lottery. But, you know, I think that for Bulls fans, you have to applaud these wins right now. Mark, would you agree? Like, I think that the wins are worth, you know, maybe losing that 1.5% chance they would have had, but, you know, still, who knows if they would have even got that given the way Cleveland, the Knicks, and Phoenix have been losing.
Yeah, hell yeah, I agree with everything you just said there. And look, the only thing that really, the thing that annoys me about this whole debate is we're talking about 1.5%, and that's what people keep bringing up. But if they want to actually make a valid argument, it should be more centered around the Bulls falling from, you know, fourth to seventh or eighth or something of that nature, rather than missing out on 1.5% chance on getting Zion. I think that's probably the better argument to make than, you know, having 1.5% less chance of potentially landing number one or whatever it may be. The odds have been flattened, so in reality, they're not they're probably not going to get Zion. So that's the way I'm approaching it. But to that other point that you made there, Ricky, like, this isn't like last season where it was Nikola Mirotic winning games for the Bulls or bloody Sean Kilpatrick coming off the bench there and, you know, winning the Bulls two or three games just because he happened to be a Mark Bartlestein client there. This isn't the same situation. Obviously, Rolo has been damn good in February himself. Otto Porter has been awesome as well. But the Bulls are looking so good right now because of Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine. Obviously, they've been supported by the bench, like we saw against the Celtics, but the Bulls have been this fun and this good because of Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine taking that next step. So if the Bulls are going to actually win games because Lauri Markkanen is going to average 25 and 12 for the month of February and have like a 25 PER, then so be it. Like, I don't give a shit at that point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've been trying to tell people down the ledge as well. Shout out to my good friend, Chris. I'm not going to say his last name, but we always argue all the time about just about the tanking stuff and all that stuff. And it's like, with the flattened odds, and Ricky, you mentioned that like that they've kind of done their – they've kind of like helped. I feel like there's really no teams that have been like blatantly tanking. I guess it was like the Suns are playing a bunch of young guys and trying to win. Like the Knicks, I don't think they've been like really desperately like trying to tank. And like the Cavs got Kevin Love back and he's playing a lot. So like I feel like all these teams are actually trying to win. So I think that the flatlined odds – have kind of helped. And yeah, I mean the Bulls play the Hawks a couple times coming up this weekend. I guess even if they beat them, like there's the Hawks have been playing pretty good lately, so that those are probably pretty good wins. And like even if the Bulls do fall to fifth, I think the odds then go to like 10%. And then Mark, you mentioned the stuff about, I guess that would mean that they have a better chance of falling to whatever, like 7 or 8. Like even then, I feel like all the talk about this draft is like once you get to like 4, it's basically the drafts are crapshoots anyways, but if you get to 4, it's like who knows who you're going to get. So like I don't even know if there's that big of a difference between 4 and 8 anyways. So it's like the chance of getting Zion are either basically like whatever, 14 or like 12 and a half or 10%. And then the rest of it is kind of a toss up. So it's like, I'm with you guys that I feel like I'm trying to tell people, don't worry about winning games. Now, if they're winning games, like you said, because of the young guys playing well, like I understand if you're mad about Robin Lopez playing 40 minutes tonight and he's playing like the best basketball of his career, which is kind of hilarious that the Bulls clearly have decided not to buy him out. They were pretty strong on that after the trade deadline, and the deadline for buying out players to go to other teams to join a playoff team is on this Friday, I believe, March 1st. It looks like they're clearly not going to do that, but I mean, Rolo has been good, and I feel like he's probably been helping the young guys as well. Just his screen setting, he clears rooms for rebounds. He's been really good defensively at 5 blocks tonight. So like, Robin Lopez playing loud does seem kind of crazy on this Bulls team, but like, he's also, I think, probably helping the development a little bit. So it's like, whatever. Let's try to enjoy this last month. It was the first half of the season was just such a shithole of a season. Like, it was just so depressing. We were so mad on these podcasts. Like, it's just kind of nice to be able to enjoy watching games again a bit, even if they don't mean that much. Like, they're salvaging the season at least a little bit. Hopefully they can keep it up and just keep playing this, because it's been a lot more fun. And like, we just want them to be fun. We want them to be good. And we've seen more of that lately.
Yeah. I mean, people forget this was meant to be a year of development. It turned into a year of tanking, but initially it wasn't meant to be a year of tanking. It was meant to be a year of improvement, a year of development. So that never went away for me, that logic. So to see now that Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine, and look, the Levine's had been doing this for most of the season, and obviously Lauri missed the first couple months of the season there with the elbow injury, but to see them really coming along as individuals and taking that next step to their own game, but finding that connection within themselves and really, you know, coming together as a pairing in the pick and roll and pick and pop. This is something you want to see these two guys playing together quite extensively over the next coming months. So I don't think this is a lost season. I was initially thinking during the season that this had been a completely wasted and failed season, but I think there's actually, for whatever reason, it's just flipped all of a sudden to the point where there is something still to be salvaged of this season. And people need to remember it is a year of development. And we've seen that from Markkanen and LaVine in February. So to me, it's all positive at the moment, like, which is kind of weird to say, I guess. I wasn't expecting to say that.
I mean, it's been a weird season.
Porter's been really good too. Otto tonight against Memphis, 20 points, 7 to 12 from the field, 3 to 6. From three-point range, he had 3 blocks, 3 steals, 3 assists, 6 boards. So I really don't think you can say enough about that move. Now, remember, you know, people might want to be crediting the Bulls now. Like, you know, the Bulls have made a couple good trades here. The trade with Memphis for Justin Holiday, that was a great move. trading Parker and Portis for Otto Porter, great move. But don't forget, the Bulls also offered Bobby Portis $50 million in an extension during the summer. If Bobby accepts that deal, I don't think this trade gets made. I think that then the Bulls are viewing him as quote unquote part of the core going forward. So like for me as a fan, it's still tough for me to totally trust, not even totally trust, even partially trust the front office, because I think that in a lot of ways they get saved from themselves by something like Bobby Portis turning down that extension.
Yeah, I mean, look, I wasn't the biggest fan of the Otto Porter trade. That's not to say I didn't like it or didn't think it was good, or it ultimately depended on what perspective you wanted to apply on the trade. But I've mentioned this before as well. I think the biggest part of the Otto Porter trade itself was just removing Jabari Parker and Bobby Portis from the rotation, not only in terms of what it did for balancing the squad, but everything else that it's done. Like even the bench units that the Bulls are playing now, they're playing a lot smaller and faster. They're playing a lot of Otto Porter at power forward, but even you know other guys running through the four spot as well. And all of a sudden, they just look like a modern basketball team. So I definitely am hesitant to say that the Bulls are back type thing in terms of management making all the right moves. They've made two successful moves this season. But to your point, Ricky, I mean, had Bobby Portis not felt himself there and actually accepted a deal, then maybe this whole thing looks completely different. But I think there are some reasons to be somewhat positive about this whole thing going forward. But yeah, just for the record, I didn't love the Otto Porter trade, but I didn't dislike it either. But maybe after a game like he had today against the Grizzlies with the numbers you quoted before, maybe I'll come around to it.
Yeah, I mean, just Porter, there's going to be some regression here, obviously, with Porter, but he has been just like ridiculously good with the Bulls so far. He entered tonight shooting 55%. Overall, 52% from three, like 18 points a game, five rebounds, three assists. Like, I mean, he just really has putting a competent player there at small forward instead of having whatever, if it was like Chandler Hutchison or Wayne Seldon's been nice, but like as a starting small forward, like you don't really want him as a starter or whatever else the crap they were playing at small forward is having a competent shooter, a guy who can do a bit more. Offensively overall, just spacing the floor, like it's clear just how much it has really helped, and like, and his numbers themselves have been great. So obviously he's not going to shoot 55% as a Bull. Those numbers are going to come down, but just overall they've been really good. Speaking of another guy who had a really nice game tonight, Mark, your favorite player, Ryan Arcidiacono, 12 points off the bench in 17 minutes, 5 of 6 from the field, 2 of 2 from three, 2 rebounds, 2 assists. He was a -6, but I don't think that was really his fault. He played some pretty hard-nosed defense, hit his shots. Please tell us, Mark, what makes you such a fan of young Arch? And I mean, he's been a nice surprise this year. I feel like he's obviously not starter material, but like as just he's proved himself to be a solid NBA player. I made jokes about him last season, thinking he was just kind of a joke and not an NBA player. And he's kind of proven he has so far. Mark, why are you such a big fan of Ryan Arcidiacono?
Well, I'm glad you brought him up because I was literally looking at the clock to see how long we had been going for. I didn't want to bring it up too early, but look, I'm a big fan of him because for this Bulls team at least, let's just focus on the Bulls. Who knows if Arcidiacono could make it on any other team, but I think he shines on a team like the Bulls because they don't necessarily have too many players that can play both sides of the ball, and they don't really have a lot of players who are actually good, smart NBA players who know what to do on every single possession. So I'm not going to sit here and say Arcidiacono is the point guard of the future. I mean, I could, and I'd be mocking my own self, but he just knows what to do and he knows how to play and he just knows who to give the ball to at the right time when it's required. So he's just a steady player who I think any coach who could insert him off the bench, you're going to feel comfortable with the 15 minutes, 20 minutes that he does play for you every single night. And I mean, for me personally, I mean, he reminds me of Kirk Heinrich. He just has that scrappy mentality. He's in there, drawing charges, just hitting the deck every single time. And they're the Bulls players that I've always loved over the years. So he's a bit of a throwback to the yesteryear of the type of Bull I've always loved. So I'll obviously put that on the record and admit that. But I think he actually does have a role on this team, obviously for this season, but going forward too. He's just a smart, heady player, and the Bulls need as many good two-way players who can make the right decision at the right time as they can get. And, we see Chris Dunn on a game-to-game basis have periods where he looks really good, but then he has some he'll go through a stretch where he's really struggling, making dumb plays, and you don't really get that with Arcidiacono. His floor is he's pretty consistent, even though he's, you know, his ceiling will never be maybe anything more than a bench guy. But I think he has value, and I'm going to stand for him as long as he goes around on this team. I think he's got a place on it.
Yeah, he actually leads the Bulls in win shares, which is kind of crazy. I'm not sure how much value you can actually put into that stat in the NBA. But, you know, a lot of his advanced stats are pretty impressive as well. He's shooting above league average with a 58% true shooting percentage. He's been hot from three, and he just doesn't screw up. Like, there's a lot of value in just having a guy who's not going to make blatant errors. I mean, you look at some of the mistakes Dunn makes as a ball handler, as a passer.
Shot selection.
To begin this game tonight against the Grizzlies, he threw a terrible pass on, like, one of their first possessions. The next possession, he comes down and misses a wide-open layup. You know, he allows an and-one against Mike Conley. It's like, Archie Diacono is going to take nothing totally off the table besides for his limitations and, like, size and athleticism. And he's just going to, like, help get everyone flowing, I feel like. And there is a lot of value in that. So I'm not saying that Archie Diacono is going to be the backup point guard on the next really good Bulls team. But I think there's a non-zero chance that could happen. Like, if we were using this period to evaluate young players and to try to find, you know, a guy like Robert Covington, who the Sixers basically just plucked out of nowhere and ended up using, you know, their rebuilding stages to develop him into a really good player. I think that that's, like, on the table, at least, for Archie Diacono, like, not with the same ceiling as Covington, but just as someone who could be an NBA rotation point guard. So, Mark, I think you're right on the money with that.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, even if he's just like the third string point guard and the guy who can, if you need him to throw him in there for some energy, for some smart play, like, there you go. I mean, he's clearly proven that he's got a spot, I feel like, on an NBA team somewhere at least.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Robert Covington, but he's almost this team's TJ McConnell in a lot of ways. So,
I mean, he
has a role on this team. And if you just think about the Bulls starting backcourt, Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine, both players are prone to bad decision-making. They're prone to high turnover games. So when you combine them and you give them both 30 minutes a game, you are really opening up that, you know, potential issue for the team where they are turning the ball over quite a bit. And we've seen that countless amount of times. So we've seen Zach LaVine in February take on more of that ball handling ability. And having someone who alongside him who's not necessarily going to turn the ball over and he's just going to spot up and hit those threes as Archie Diacono can sort of do, I think there is value to that type of player next to LaVine, more so than Chris Dunn can provide at times.
Yeah, so I guess on that note, what do you make of Chris Dunn's future with the Bulls? Like, obviously, he has really struggled this month. It seems like the writing is kind of on the wall with him because there was another awkward moment on the broadcast tonight with Neil's replacement, Lisa Byington, I think her name was, asked Stacey at the end of the broadcast, like, so we're like, what do the Bulls need moving forward? And, like, they need a point guard, right? And Stacey wouldn't take the bait. But, like, there have been times this year where he's criticized Dunn. And there was, I've mentioned this a few times, a Bucks game, I think, before the break. He didn't even mention Chris Dunn's name during, like, when he was running down the Bulls' core. Like, and, like, Paxson hasn't really given him his stamp of approval moving forward. Like, clearly, I just feel like that they're going to make some type of point guard upgrade somehow, whether it's through the draft, whether it's free agency, whether it's both. I mean, what do you make of the whole Chris Dunn situation?
Well, I mean, it's funny. You just mentioned Pax, and I was literally going to bring it up. But he's pretty honest in the way he addresses the media and those sorts of things. He's pretty transparent, even when he's not trying to be. And I just think back to, I mean, it may have been Fred Hoiberg's first season or his second season, whenever it was. But he made it pretty clear in his words and what he didn't say about Fred that he wasn't necessarily enamored with what Hoiberg was doing. And I'm sort of getting that vibe with Chris Dunn right now from Pax. So right now, Pax has mentioned that the fact that the Bulls are basically going to give him the rest of the season to evaluate him to see what that means and to see how he can sort of figure out the last 20-odd games or whatever it may be. But that's not necessarily a ringing endorsement of Chris Dunn from John Paxson. So I'm getting those vibes from Paxson where he's sort of just persevering with Dunn like he did with Hoiberg. But if the moment sort of comes around where he can find a better option, and I'm sure that may be the case coming up in the draft or in free agency, that he will happily move on from Chris Dunn. That's the vibe I'm getting. That I'm basing that completely on, speculating that completely on, based on what John Paxson has and hasn't said. But that would be my guess as to what's happening. So, and I don't think Pax is wrong in that approach. I think Chris Dunn is going to be 25 in a few days' time. So people like to bring up that this is only his third year, that he's only played X amount of minutes, that he's only played X amount of games. But the dude is 25. He's basically in his athletic prime right now. I don't know how much better he can get. He's not necessarily a 20 or a 21-year-old player here where I'm thinking a few more years in a system is going to make him that much better. I'm kind of concerned that this guy has almost hit the ceiling where he may be headed towards being that bench or that first point guard off the bench type of player. So if that's what Chris Dunn ultimately is going to be, then he's not the Bulls' answer because they need that starting point guard.
Yeah, so here's the question you have to ask yourself. If LaVine is part of the team long-term moving forward, what type of point guard do you want next to him? I think in a lot of ways, the idea of Chris Dunn fits what you're looking for. Ideally, you want someone who's long, who can guard multiple positions, like take on the tougher defensive assignment in the backcourt. You want someone who's a little bit more of a natural facilitator, but someone who ideally you could play on or off the ball. Well, the problem with Dunn is that he just has so many holes in his game. And he hasn't improved on any of them. His three-point shooting has remained remarkably steady throughout his career. He's bad at it. He won't take threes, and he doesn't make them when he does. He's hitting only 31.7% of his threes this season, taking under two attempts per game. The free throws is even more pathetic. This guy should be able to get to the line at will, just given his physical tools. Instead, he's only taking 1.5 free throws a game. So I just feel like, you know, they have to do something bold at point guard. I think they want to draft Ja Morant. That's not any inside information. The point guard from Murray State, we've seen John Paxson at one of his games this year scouting him. I know they've had scouts at other games too. So I think that, you know, if the Bulls get the opportunity to take Ja Morant, he could very easily be the guy. I've been thinking of a trade I want to throw out to you two guys. Let me know what you think of this one. If you were to get, you know, let's say the third or fourth pick in this draft, maybe even the second pick.
Are we going Drew Holiday here? Is this coming right now?
Drew Holiday would be great, but I'm not sure he quite fits the timeline. I'm going Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the point guard for the Clippers. I think he would be an ideal fit next to Zach LaVine in the backcourt. He's basically like if Chris Dunn was just actually good, like if the idea of Chris Dunn was the reality, he's a 6'6 point guard with a 7-foot wingspan, so he's much bigger than Dunn, first of all, even though Dunn has a reputation as a big guard. He is a little shy to pull the trigger from three, but super long, good defensively. He can actually get to the rim and finish and use his size and length. So I feel like the Clippers are obviously going to make some big moves during this offseason. I think they have, what, one or two? Do they have two max spots available now this summer?
I think they can get close to two. I think that's what they're hoping for.
You know, if they want to add RJ Barrett to the mix there, I'll take Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So I'm just throwing that out there for you guys.
Oh, man. That's tough. I watched a decent amount of Kentucky down the stretch last year when he like really blew up his stock, and I did like him. I do worry about the same kind of things with Dunn, like the three-point shooting and stuff like that. But I know his tools are really great. It's just like once you get past like whatever, like you said, three or four, like it's just kind of like such a crapshoot. Like, do you take Cam Reddish or Jared Culver or Romeo Langford or one of these other dudes, or do you trade for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander?
Like, if they get Barrett, I'm not going to be thrilled about it. I'm not going to be like, well, here come the Bulls. Now, I think the Bear can still be a productive NBA player, no doubt about it. I think he's got a really high floor. Yeah. And hopefully, you know, he's able to leverage his physical ability defensively a little bit more than he's shown at Duke this season. Like, just based on his tools, RJ Barrett should be an impactful defensive player. And if that happens, you know, he'll probably be a pretty good player. But I just feel like, you know, the Bulls need to do something at point guard here. I don't think Barrett is a point guard. They could try him as that, but I don't think that's their move.
Are there any other of those point guards? Like, is Darius Garland? Is that the second best point guard?
I saw him playing on the EYBL, which is Nike's AAU circuit, when his class were seniors. And I thought he was the best point guard in that high school class. Obviously not a banner year for that position as it was a few years ago during the draft with Dennis Smith and Lonzo and Fultz and De'Aaron Fox. But I thought he was the best. Now, he has some holes in his game, though. He's very small. He's like 6'1 or 6'2". He shines with his pull-up shooting ability. and he's a pretty good but not great passer. It's not like he's a Trae Young style dude who's going to, like, you know, rack up 12, 13 assists in a game. But he does have some good pull-up shooting ability. He also is going to struggle to finish at the rim because he's not very explosive and he is so small. I don't know if him and LaVine defensively would be viable long-term moving forward. So, yeah, I mean, he's in the mix. Trae Jones, I guess, the point guard from Duke. Teams don't even guard him on the perimeter anymore. He can't shoot at all. Very good
player. Yeah, not that high.
Yeah, I don't know. I want Gilgeous Alexander. That's one thing I've been thinking about.
Mark, what do you think about that?
Well, I don't know why I thought of this, but like back in 2017, I wish the Bulls had a late second round pick so they could have taken Monty Morris. I mean, that would have been nice back in the day. But
he's been great. Ames Mafia.
Yeah, but I don't know what they're going to do at point guard. Like, I'm wondering if someone or the point guards in this draft, if they're being hyped up a little bit too much because there isn't that necessarily that many point guard options at the top of the draft. So I wonder if they're benefiting from that. From that fact, so I'll probably divert to Ricky on that one. But I honestly don't know what they're going to do at point guard. It's a problem. They'll probably put in a stopgap for 1 or 2 years via free agency. That's probably the most likely thing to do. I kind of agree that they need to go and do something crazy, like potentially moving their pick if it's not necessarily a top three pick. I wouldn't necessarily be enamored with, you know, someone like RJ Barrett or someone like that. I would be trying to move it for a point guard, whether that's Gilgeous Alexander or someone else. I don't know what the answer is, but I think they really need to lock down that point guard position. But I think ideally, or not necessarily ideal, I think what they're going to do is just find that stopgap position over, you know, over free agency for 1 to 2 seasons. And I almost feel like this rebuild is going to be somewhat accelerated come July. That's the sense I get. I could be wrong, but that's kind of where I think this is headed. I don't think they're necessarily going to get younger in that sense.
Would you do a Jrue Holiday trade? I was talking about that on Twitter and some friends as well recently, arguing about whether, like, obviously that you talk about accelerating the rebuild. Like, should they do that? Like, should they try to bring in a player like Jrue Holiday and try to make a big jump? Like, if you think that they're like a point guard away from being like I don't want to say really good. I mean, they still have a long way to go before we can really take them seriously. But like, if they actually had you put in a good veteran player like Jrue Holiday there who can play both ends, like, would they become a playoff team? Like, are they like a surefire bottom of the East playoff team there? Could they even be better there? Like, would you try to make that kind of move even if he doesn't really fit the timeline? And if you're giving up a possible, whatever, 19, 20-year-old with potential, would you do something like that?
I mean, it would depend on the deal itself, but ultimately, if they're looking at guys like Ricky Rubio or Darren Collison or even someone like Malcolm Brogdon, who's still perceived as a young guy, he's 26, going to be 27 soon. Yeah, so, I mean, if they were to bring in someone like that, even Ricky Rubio, who's like 28, 29-year-old, I don't necessarily know why you wouldn't necessarily go after Jrue Holiday if you are thinking go for that mature age sort of point guard option. Obviously, it's a lot different proposition, you know, trading for Holiday versus signing one of those guys that's outright in free agency. But if that's the plan and the idea is to bring in someone that's 27, 28, 29 years of age at point guard, then I think Holiday is pretty much the perfect option to put next to LaVine, and as a third option with LaVine and Markkanen would really work. And I'm just thinking about the defense here and Otto Porter brings alongside of Lowry and LaVine and bringing Wendell back in. That's actually a pretty exciting team. So I don't necessarily – I actually think it's pretty good. It's an interesting one. It depends on what it would take via trade. I'm assuming the Pelicans would want something kind of decent. But if they're going – for a mature age guy in free agency, which is probably where they're going to head, if I'm guessing, after trading for Otto Porter, who will be 26 soon, you know, you bring in a mature point guard, I can just see where this is headed, in the sense that they'll make one last pick in this draft coming up and maybe a top five pick. They'll sign some veterans and then they'll sort of push forward. But if that's the case, then I don't think they should be opposed to trading for some veterans too.
Yeah. All right. Now for a word from our sponsor. Life can be stressful, but getting life insurance shouldn't be. That's why there's Ethos. Ethos is a modern kind of life insurance that's super fast, incredibly affordable, and very uncomplicated. At GetEthos.com, there are no medical exams for policies covering under $1 million, no hours of paperwork or meetings with pushy representatives. Nobody likes pushy representatives. It only takes 10 minutes to apply, and you can rest assured knowing you've taken steps to protect your family. And in most cases with Ethos, you can have that peace of mind for less than a cup of coffee a day with no hidden fees. Great. Having life insurance can free you from stress, getting life insurance shouldn't cause it. Discover how uncomplicated life insurance can be at Ethos. Get your free instant quote and submit your complete application in just minutes. So that's just go to getethos.com. That's E-T-H-O-S, getethos.com, getethos.com. And we're back. So I guess just, yeah, talking about, like, I guess a brief, if you want to take a brief look ahead, like, if, with depending on what the Bulls do this summer, if they do get that accelerated rebuild. I was just kind of thinking about the Eastern Conference today. Just the Eastern Conference is such a hot mess. Like, I think one of the reasons why Bulls fans thought they could possibly make, like, a run towards the East playoffs next season was because the Eastern Conference is so trash. And I was just looking at the standings today. Like, the bottom of the East playoff race is such a fucking joke. Like, the Heat won on, like, a D-Wade buzzer beater three against the Warriors tonight. It was so garbage, but, like, they're right there. Like, the Hornets hold the 8 seed right now. They're 28-33. The Magic just lost to the Bulls last week, and then the Knicks the other night. They're 28-34. The Heat moved to 27-33, but they just lost to the Suns. Like, do you see how trash some of these teams are at the bottom of the East? Like, that's why I feel like Bulls fans think that maybe they could, like, make a run towards the playoffs next season if they, especially with the core that they have right now, and then if they make the right moves in free agency. Like, I don't think it's that crazy. Like, some people might still say hold your horse, but I feel like the Bulls could be at least in the mix if the playoffs, if it's similar next year, like, if get the 35-ish wins, like, making that kind of jump, I don't think would be that crazy. Like, Mark, do you think that they could possibly fight for a playoff seed next year if the East is so bad again?
I mean, without coming off like sounding like C-Red Fred here, then...
Well, I'm not talking about winning like 50 games. I'm like possibly like fighting for the eighth seed.
I mean, it's definitely in play. And the reason why I would say that is that, they've got $20 million in space in 2019 to do something with. And I think they probably, rather than spending it on one or two guys, are probably better off spending it across two or three players. But if you just think about their point guard problem, maybe their backup big, and maybe another wing off the bench. They're the roles they've really got to fill. So if you can sort of replace someone like Cristiano Felicio, who's getting the backup center minutes at the moment, maybe you put Rolo back to the bench and you have Wendell coming back, and you bring off another wing off the bench, bring back Seldon, and then find that point guard. You know, even if it is a stopgap option, let's just say it's Ricky Rubio, whoever it may be. If you just fill those positions with competent NBA players and you don't necessarily have to go to your bench and play Shaquille Harrison or Cristiano Felicio or, God forbid, give Antonio Blakeney minutes. If you can sort of avoid that situation and insert or plug in some competent NBA players, then, yeah, we're potentially looking at a 35-win team, maybe with some more upside depending on what Wendell does, what the draft pick does. And I think it's definitely possible that the Bulls can sort of sneak into that 7th or 8th seed next season. But, you know, who knows what will happen. But I think there is a path for that to occur.
Yeah, I think there is too. I mean, especially if they get Jrue Holiday. I haven't actually seen anyone talk about the Bulls potentially going after Holiday. I do think that if they could get him without giving up a first-round pick, that he would be ideal. I mean, Jrue Holiday is an awesome player, and I think his contract is 1 year longer than Porter's off the top of my head. So, if you're going to keep Porter's contract on the books, you might as well, you know, take on another big one in Holiday too. I do think that, you know, a jump up the Eastern Conference standings could be possible. But like Mark said, they got to get all the players who wouldn't even be on another NBA roster out of this rotation. Felicio, number one. I don't know if you're going to be able to find anyone to take that $8 million off your hands for the next two seasons, but at least get to a point where you're not playing him. Would you bring back Lopez? He's a free agent after the year. He currently makes $14 million. I think in the new NBA, he's probably going to get like $3 million.
He's probably like a minimum guy, or like a mini MLE type guy. But yeah, like, he's like, no one wanted to trade for him.
$3 million contract right now.
Yeah. I mean, Rolo has been incredible. Like, it's been kind of outrageous how well Rolo has been playing lately. He didn't have a good offensive game tonight, but like before tonight, over his last five games, he was putting up like 20 points a game on like 65% shooting, like just dominating down low. He's found like the fountain of youth. Tonight he played – talk about Felicio for a second here. It is like unbelievable how shitty he is. Like tonight he blew – like within like two – he played 6 minutes. Lopez played 40 minutes tonight because Felicio is so bad. He was like a -6 in like 6 minutes. He blew an alley-oop. He botched a wide-open layup. Last game against the Bucks, The Bulls were up like 13, I think, after the first quarter. And the second unit comes in, Felicio like mishandles a ball. He can't catch a pass. Like he's just because we loved we used to love Big Chris. Like we were big Chris supporters. Like didn't quite love the $4 million deal. I feel like the Bulls bid against themselves there, but like he had shown some nice things when the Bulls. He looked like a nice little piece for the Bulls, and now he is basically unplayable. It is like unreal how bad he is, and it's just really unfortunate that it has turned like this. But I guess here's a question you bring up. Like you talk about backup centers next year. Would you rather sign Robin Lopez, Joakim Noah, or Taj Gibson?
I mean, I was going to bring up Taj. I think Taj is a center in the modern NBA these days. I think he probably has more left in him than Joakim Noah. I say that even though Joakim dominated the Bulls today, so maybe he'll prove me wrong. I'd be cool with either one. I just want one former Bull back on this squad. But Taj is my guy. I would be very happy to see him back. But you know, another name that I'd like to throw in the mix is I was listening to the Low Post earlier this morning, and he had Joe Harris and Sarah Kustok on. So it was a very Nets type podcast. And what about Jared Dudley as a backup four off the bench? He's an unrestricted free agent. He's a Bartlestein client, I believe. He just makes perfect sense as a Bulls guy. And from all reports, he's just the perfect locker room vet mentor guy. I think he would be a great addition to the bench.
Yeah, I mean, those kind of guys are probably what they're going to be looking for. Like, you maybe add a couple bigger names maybe with that cap space. Like, I kind of agree with you that I'd probably rather split it among a few players rather than, like, go out and try to make a big splash unless they trade it for a guy like Jrue Holiday or something like that. But if they're going to sign guys, like, try to sign some veterans and try to get some veterans on the cheap. Like you said, go after Taj. They need a backup. They could use a backup stretch four type. Jared Dudley's been great for the Nets this season. He's very entertaining to follow on Twitter. He's very active on there and talking with fans. I think he'd be a really easy guy to root for. I don't hate that idea at all.
The Bulls need a big point guard or a starting point guard. Really, they need a backup wing and a backup center. If they get both those things, if they can add three, you know, actual productive NBA players to the rotation, not stars, but just guys who can hold their own, I do think that would really improve the team, especially, you know, if you have a situation next year where Porter's on the team the entire season, Markkanen's not getting hurt in training camp. I think that's the blueprint right there.
Guys, we're forgetting about Denzel Valentine. Come on. Exactly. That's about the best way you could go with that. Just I always forget that he's actually on this team. So I mean, Denzel's not even that bad. Like I like to joke about Denzel, especially because C-Red Fred fucking loves Denzel. But like he wasn't even that bad last season. Like he's a good 3-point shooter. Like if he's like your ninth or tenth guy, like I'm good with Denzel Valentine, even if his legs or his ankles are made of glass.
Well, I mean, Denzel will be 26. Next season or either this season or whenever I think it'll be next season. So he's not necessarily young as well. So just even more reason to, well, maybe not necessarily accelerate the rebuild, but if he's coming off the bench, he's a 26-year-old, you know, bringing in another 27 or 28-year-old, maybe someone else instead of Denzel Valentine, it wouldn't necessarily be the worst thing. And I just don't know what to make of the guy. This is a pretty significant deal with, you know, his ankle injury. So who knows, but I'm not expecting much.
Yeah, so I guess on that same note, I kind of have a little fun question here for you. I mentioned C-Red Fred. He loves Denzel. You and C-Red Fred, I feel like, have a nice little, shall we say, rivalry going on Twitter. How did that start? And, like, I don't even remember. Because I mean, I've been following both you guys for a while and kind of just watching it. I sometimes get involved, and we always go back and forth. How did you and C-Red Fred start your little Twitter rivalry? Because I saw him the other day had some goofy-ass Photoshops. Of you, like, just I don't even know what he's doing over there. But how did that whole thing get started? Because it does amuse me very much.
I honestly can't even remember. I mean, it feels like we've been the best way to sum up our relationship. It's like an old married couple. So I don't know how it started or why it started. It probably started with me. I was sort of late to Twitter, so Fred had been on Twitter for quite a while, and I think once I started following some key Bulls people, he was amongst them. And I probably took it too seriously initially, and I just constantly got into arguments with this guy who I thought was a complete lunatic. But then over the years, I sort of softened and I realized that he's actually a pretty cool dude, someone that I enjoy being around and just enjoy just joking around with. So I can't remember exactly how it played out or why it played out, but I don't know. We found a similar wavelength. We couldn't be more opposites in terms of how we view basketball, but we find a way to just just poke fun at each other, I guess. And I love Fred. He's the best.
It's kind of beautiful. Here we have you who lived your whole life in Australia. Correct. Fred, lifelong Chicago guy, becoming, you know, fake enemies or, you know, a nemesis of another friend of
frenemies.
It's a beautiful Twitter story, in my opinion.
It's definitely the romance that I always wanted to have in my life. So I'm very fortunate of Fred. He brings me a lot of joy. His content and his tweets, I find a lot of fun in going back over his old tweets because there's a lot of gems in there.
Oh yeah, I mean, he just goes wild. Like tonight, obviously his whole thing is like the Bulls are going to win the title in like 2021. I believe before the season they were going to win the title next season. And like after the game tonight, he was like, "Oh yeah, like LaVine, Carter, and Markkanen, like best big three in the league in like 2021." It's just like he just gets that shit off, man. Just fires it off without any regard. Like it just doesn't care. I mean, obviously, while that might be kind of ridiculous, like he's just a big Bulls fan. He obviously means well. Just have it's his bit. It is entertaining. Like it used to annoy me a lot more in the past, but like he's just a lovable, very very optimistic Bulls fan. Like it definitely is funny getting in quote unquote arguments with you and him, and that back and forth is always fun.
I wish I did have some of his optimism. I like to think I'm more of a realist more than a pessimist. I get labeled a pessimist.
Yeah, I believe we are. Like, I think like all three of us are like on a similar realist, a little more pessimist. Well, he's just like full blown optimism. The Leviathan, the red Leviathan, the big red bust, beep beep. Like,
yeah, I mean,
crazy.
He's a little too psycho for me. But if I could just like pinch, you know, maybe 5% of his optimism, then I would definitely do it. So I'm a little bit envious of that.
I've decided I'm going to see red Fred the White Sox. We're going to use see red Fred as a verb now. And I'm going to see red Fred the White Sox where, like, I know that logically everything is, like, deeply messed up and that the White Sox are going to be trash and have no real hope moving forward. But I'm just going to love every Eloy Jimenez homer and get, like, really confident about Kopech coming back to win the Cy Young. So I think that see red Fred is really a trendsetter in the genre of progressing Chicago sports. Like,
there you go.
You know, as long as Greg Reinsdorf owns your favorite team, you might as well embody some sort of character, some like deep held irony that everything is actually much better than it seems on the surface level.
I mean, I don't know how you do it. I was going to tweet this out last week, but I didn't want to get in trouble. But I mean, I don't follow baseball at all. The only baseball thing I know is based on the timeline and what it tells me. But I do know that Jerry Reinsdorf obviously owns the White Sox. So I just don't understand how there are people in Chicago that allow themselves to, you know, root for teams that are owned by Jerry Reinsdorf. Just the Bulls. That's enough for me. So I don't know how you do it, Ricky, but you must have the patience of a saint, I guess.
Yeah, Mark. But what do you know about a man named Frank Thomas?
No,
I got to grow up with Michael Jordan and Frank Thomas. That was pretty dope. But it's been bad for like for a long time now.
White Sox are bad. Like the Cubs were obviously bad for a while now. The White Sox won their series in it was 2005, right? Their World Series. Oh. Yeah. I feel like ESPN forgets about White Sox World Series champions all the time, so don't blame me. But I feel like they haven't been in the playoffs since 2008. It has been rough. And I'm rooting for them. I'm a huge Cubs fan. I'm rooting for the White Sox to be good. It's better when both the Cubs and the White Sox are good. So
the point is, see Red Fred, man. Yeah. He's an idol. He's figured this out.
Yeah. We did talk about Joakim Noah a bit now. Now that since the Bulls did play him tonight, we have talked about him a bit before as well on other pods. Just favorite Joakim Noah moments. But since in honor of Joakim playing tonight and playing well, I feel like he was almost the Grizzlies' best player tonight. He like changed the energy for them. He did some really nice things. So I guess just Mark, what is your favorite Joakim Noah memory when he was with the Bulls?
I mean, I honestly don't even know where to necessarily start. But I don't even know if it's necessarily one singular play or something like. The thing that really, you know, I remember or recall about Joakim Noah is that just that primal scream that he would always have, whether it's, you know, block after blocking a shot, after getting a rebound and making a putback, whatever it was, there was always just this real emotive primal scream, which me as a fan was basically replicating on the other side of the world, which we're just seeing Joakim doing that. That's probably the fondest memory that I have of him. But I mean, you can't go past that dunk on Paul Pierce back in 2009, or even these Game 7 performance against the Nets in 2013. I mean, yes. They're the ones, you know, strictly game performances. They're the ones that jump out at me straight away. But just that entire, actually, 2014 season, I mean, that's probably one of the most joyous experiences I've ever had as a fan. And even 2013, too, when, you know, after Derrick Rose goes down with those injuries, those teams were expected to be terrible. They weren't. They'd still found a way to fight back. And I think Joakim was a big part of that, just the spirit that he sort of had and that soul that he had. You know, he would have been a player that Jim Boylan would have absolutely loved. So they're the fond memories that I have about Joakim, just the way, the passion he played with. And I'm not from Chicago, but he almost made me feel like I was in that sense, in the way he repped the Bulls and the team. And, you know, being on the other side of the world, I almost had like an affinity to the Bulls because of Joakim Noah. So that's what he means to me. And, they're my fond memories about the dude.
So much spirit, the Bulls across the chest. That Joakim Noah and Jim Boylan would have absolutely loved it.
I've just got an image of Joakim now just pounding his chest, pounding his heart, and just hitting that Bulls across his chest. He's a total Boylan player.
By the way, how happy did you think that beating the Lakers and beating LeBron on Noah's
man, that was
how happy do you think that made him? Like, I really think that Noah deeply believes LeBron is just a phony. Like, I don't think he thinks he's like a terrible guy or anything, but I think that he probably believes he gets calls no one else gets. And he probably believes that like he's just corny and he's just a phony. Noah was great in that game. I think he had 14, 12, and 4 on LeBron's birthday. The Grizzlies beat the Lakers. Joakim, I was nearly crying tears of joy in your honor because I knew how happy that made you deep down.
I was going to say, just like watching him beat LeBron in another regular season game, just like I feel like trolling LeBron was like, again, one of the things you remember about
him. To win the game, too. Or like, it was in crunch time, I think. LeBron was barreling down the lane and Noah stood in.
Yeah.
Grizzlies ball, Grizzlies win.
It was beautiful. Like you said, brought a tear to the eye. It's great stuff because, yeah, I mean, just like the Noah, like I thought he was done. And Mark, you mentioned that 2014 season being like the most fun, like Bull. Like, I feel like that's the last like legitimately fun Bull season because, like, if you like look at like the last 4 or 5 years, we've been complaining so much about the front office. And like the 2014, 2015 team was good, but like there was the last year of Tibbs, and like that year was like just miserable. It was so much tension. The year after that was, I feel like they missed the first year of Fred was ugly. They missed the playoffs. Then it was three alphas. And then like last year was mostly terrible. Like it's been like 4 or 5 straight just shit years of Bulls basketball. And that whole Noah thing, like I was ready to throw in the tank. I think that was the year they traded Deng, right? 2013, 2014. They traded Deng. Rose was hurt again. And then Noah just like put the team on his back. They had like DJ Augustine playing starting point guard. You had Noah. I think they still had Boozer that year. And that was just a fun ass season. Like no expectations and to win whatever. The playoff series against the Wizards was awful. I was in the building for that game in like a suite. I think Steve Weinman actually hooked me up with tickets for that. The Bulls analytics guy. Thanks, Steve. Except the Bulls scored like 70 points and lost in 5 games at home. It was terrible. But that season in general was awesome because of Joakim Noah. He left his heart on the table or on the floor every night. And I'm pretty sure he almost ruined his career because of it, because he was playing like 35, 40 minutes a night, playing his ass off through injuries. It was incredible. And it was awesome to watch Noah do that. So that was a whole lot of fun. I'm trying to think of if there's anything else exciting to talk about here, guys. We're pretty close to wrapping up here. I guess we could look ahead really quick here, just the Bulls' upcoming schedule. Let's see. Let me pull it up right now. Like I said, they play the Hawks coming up, so that's, I guess, if you're worried about the tank standings, the Bulls have 2 games. I think this is the last 2 games against the Hawks coming up. They got a home. Is it home first? I'm pulling up. Okay, so Friday, the Bulls are at Atlanta, 6:30 Central Time, and then Sunday they have a matinee back at the United Center, and then they got some interesting games coming up after that. They go to Indiana, they host the Sixers, they got a couple games against the Pistons, so they'll be interesting, and then they play the Lakers in the middle of March, so there'll be a really interesting stretch up coming up here against some pretty solid teams. The Hawks record isn't good, but they've been playing better, and then some Eastern Conference playoff teams to see if the Bulls can keep up this hot stretch. It'll be interesting to watch. Mark, thank you so much for coming on. Also, Mark, you're getting married soon. Where are you going on your honeymoon?
Well, I'll be going to Europe actually during free agency. I did not plan that well at all. So basically the month of July, man. I'll be in Europe, which isn't the best planning that I've ever done in my life. So, but it shouldn't be too much of a big deal. I mean, the Bulls aren't necessarily going to take a big swing in free agency. So from a Bulls point of view, it probably won't matter too much. But just generally, I think it's going to be pretty chaotic in the NBA landscape. So I'll be in Europe during that. But yeah, getting married soon next week. Next weekend, basically. So I'll be taking the plunge.
That's awesome. Married life is pretty good. So it should be a lot of fun. May I ask, where are you going in Europe?
So I'll be going to England, the UK, and then I'll be heading to France, I think, for a few days, and Italy for a couple of weeks, and then finishing up at the motherland for a few days. So it should be fun.
Nice, yeah. Because I went to Greece on my honeymoon. I made sure it was in late August. I planned around that free agency, yeah, and made sure nice. It was at the end of the summer. So,
yeah, Jason needed to get that bullet on Jabari Parker text alert. It couldn't be.
Well, actually, when I was on my honeymoon, because it was like last, was it 20? It was like 2017. Whatever. That was when Kyrie had his trade request. So like, I was over in Greece, like checking my phone when I could, because I promised the wife not to be on the phone too much, but. It's like laying in bed. I saw like, holy shit, Kyrie Irving could request his trade from the Cavs. So there was some pretty wild shit that happened on mine. But that sounds awesome. Yeah, I would love to get back to Europe. Greece was fucking dope. That was my first time in the motherland, and it was a lot of fun. So congratulations. Congratulations on that.
Let me just say that Mark is doing a fantastic job covering the Bulls this season. Podcast Bulls HQ. If you listen to this one, listen to that one too. You should already be doing that. He's also been writing for Bloggable, which is where Jason and I do most of our Bulls writing. And Mark has provided great commentary and insight on the team throughout the season. He's been doing it as well on Twitter. So follow Mark at MK Hoops. Subscribe to his podcast. Keep reading Bloggable. He's producing a lot of good stuff. So I just know that I, for one, am thankful to have Mark's voice in the Bulls blogosphere. I enjoy Mark's takes on all things Bulls. So if you're not following him, follow him. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Hey, I appreciate it, guys. It was a lot of fun, and you know, it's nice being on the other side of the podcast line here, just being the guest for a change. So appreciate you guys having me on. Thanks for the props, and yeah, speak spoon. Maybe I'll get you guys on my show. Maybe after I'm back from my wedding, we'll do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And congratulations again on the wedding. It should be a great time. It's getting married. It's a lot of fun. So congrats again on that.
Cheers, guys. Appreciate it.
Cheers. All right. That will do it. I guess just finish it up here. I guess one more point I wanted to make is that the Bulls beat the Celtics ass recently. I missed the Celtics game, which was really disappointing. Because I know Ricky, Mr. Bulls in six, we always love to rip on the Celtics around here. So It was really cool to see the Bulls just beat the Celtics ass, and they're really struggling lately. Ricky, were you able to see any of that, the Bulls Celtics game?
Oh yeah,
okay. I was so bummed to miss it.
The Celtics are just a fucking disgrace to basketball in general. I mean, what a horrific team. The Bulls now they've lost two straight since then, so that's four straight losses for Boston. I mean, when you get blown out by the Bulls, you know that everything's just going down the toilet. So if the Boston really does fall apart towards a stretch run, which seems like it's happening right now, like we're getting a lot of passive aggressive Kyrie Irving post-game reviews. The young guys on the team who took them to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals last year, they just do not seem to be jiving with Kyrie for whatever reason. I will take great joy in pointing to that blowout Bulls win as the moment when the Celtics
season. It would be hilarious. And it would be especially funny because the Celtics beat the Bulls by 56, and that was the mutiny, like the post-mutiny game. And when the Bulls season was on the drain. Now the Bulls are playing great. The Celtics look like ass. The Schadenfreude will be real if the Celtics fall apart, if they lose Kyrie, don't get Anthony Davis. I will be gloating even if the Bulls aren't actually back yet. I will love every second of it. That'd be hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing worse than Boston sportsmen. Next, agree on that. It's the one thing the whole country agrees
absolutely.
On.
Next season, Bulls in six, for real. They're going to the playoffs. They're going to beat the Celtics in six. It's going to happen. We'll see, hopefully. But that will be all for us today. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks again for Mark for coming on. Reminder, Blue Wire Cash Considerations is part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. There, we have a ton of good pods. We're adding a bunch of pods. We're growing fast. mentioned, we just added a Clippers pod. We got tons of other good teams, the Warriors, the Lakers. We got a bunch of good stuff across the Blue Wire Network, so please do go check us out. You can find Blue Wire on Twitter at Blue Wire Pods. So that's all for today. We'll be back hopefully in the next week or so. Hopefully the Bulls keep playing well. So this was Cash Considerations. Jason and Ricky, have a good one, guys.